Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program. Tonight's show is one that every parent is going to want to listen to, Abby.
Yes, we are.
And we're both parents.
You're both parents, and we both have tried to have this discussion with lots of people, including our own kids.
Yeah, and the theme of tonight's show is not my kid. What does that mean?
Well, it's really interesting to me. It's, you know, for years I've been in this field, and for years people have been telling me, like I say, you know, your kid's 14, you might want to talk to them about, you know, drugs and alcohol and what's available in the school. And they say, not in our school system. It's not here. On and on and on. You know, it's not until they get to be about 18, right? Yeah, no. So I think it's really important. The one thing I recommend is that everybody talk to their kids about drugs.
And we're going to talk
early on.
We're going to talk to a couple of our guests, and they're going to help us through that and kind of how the conversation is going to look. Kids in school, most parents think everyone else's kids do drugs but theirs. We hear it all the time at Turn.
I don't remember the exact statistics, but it was this great thing where most people underestimate their own kids' drug use significantly and overestimate everybody else's kids' drug use.
Which I love. Which is, you know, it's understandable if you're a parent. Tonight we have Officer Nancy Liedberg of the Brockton Police Department in the studio, as well as Heather Kennedy, who's the program director of the COPE Center in Brockton, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And we're going to find out how to spot the telltale signs of teen drug use and what to do if you find out your kid is using. Welcome, Nancy and Heather.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
So, first things first. I don't know if my kid's using drugs. I don't know if, you know, if his friends are using drugs, his or her friends are. What questions should I be asking them to engage them?
Well, it mostly depends on the age. We always counsel parents that it has to be age appropriate, but let's say middle school, high school, we have suggestions on taking the first person, the child, out of it. So you'd say, how often do you hear people talking about drugs at school, or how many of your friends have tried marijuana, and start talking about other people first to get a sense of how prevalent it is. You know, have they been exposed?
But actually, you've talked in the past about starting the safety conversation. You know, you hold your hands, you know, when you look both ways when you cross the street. And
that's right. So it has to be age appropriate, and we will start talking to kids very, very young about holding hands when you cross the street, look both ways, and we suggest that you start talking about drug education during that safety spiel. So, you know, talking about when a kid starts taking medicine, or a child sees you take a Tylenol, whatever the case may be, about how you have to, you know, use it as directed, and if it's prescription, only as a doctor prescribes, just so you're already having a conversation about drugs.
That was another one of the stats, and I can't remember the number, but we did it on a recent show where that initiating that conversation earlier and making it very clear that it's not okay to use drugs increases the chances that the kid won't use drugs.
Right. When they do test, they ask people why they postponed their drug use. They often will say, because my parents didn't approve. So if you're very clear about it, you know, there's going to be some fighting back. But if you start the conversation earlier, you can often postpone at least before they first start.
And it's also about, you know, walking the walk as well as talking the talk.
Yeah.
If you tell your child you don't believe in using drugs and then they see you smoking marijuana, you're kind of sending the wrong message.
Well, right? And we see that a lot, too, is where the parents need as much kind of help with this
sure.
as possible. It is, you know, and the parents say, well, I'm just smoking a little weed. What problem could that possibly be? When you hear that, what do you think?
Well, I think that you're setting not the greatest example. If a parent chooses to do that, I would strongly encourage them to think about not exposing their child to it. It's a much different thing, and obviously the law enforcement perspective is much, much different. But, you know, taking my profession out of it, just a parent smoking an illegal substance in front of their child, that's really not a great thing. It's like saying, well, you know, the state says you have to be a certain age to drive a car, but don't worry about it. You're 12 now. Here's the keys.
Okay, that's a good, I like that.
Go ahead.
No, that was Devin. Well,
there's a couple statistics here that we need to hear. 75% of high school students have used addictive substances. And then here's one for approximately 16% of the U.S. population age 12 and over meet the clinical diagnostic criteria for addiction to nicotine, alcohol, and other drugs. So it exists. And even statistically, if 75% of high school students have used addictive substances, and 100% of parents say, not my kid, 75% of them are wrong, right?
Right. I mean, no, it's really interesting because there is denial is when, that's why I like that number. It's hard to be saying, well, my kid is really the 25%, right. Never used anything. The other thing is minimizing what they used. Oh, they only used marijuana or they, you know, I mean, so, but if you're only using marijuana at breakfast, you know, it's definitely going to influence your day.
But doesn't that also sound like when you talk to somebody that's using, oh, I have this under control.
Yes.
Right. I can stop anytime.
That's right. Keeping it down. Well, I mean, one of the things is parents don't think they can influence their kids, and they really, really can.
They really can.
And they can help. And you can help other people's kids, too. I mean, I've worked with parents for years now, and the ones who, like, get involved and who drive the neighbors crazy because if there's no parties allowed at their house and, you know, they're the wonderful parents, but they have a really hard time. You know, I've worked with people who would say, like, oh, yeah, somebody was getting high and I caught their parents, the other kid's parents, and they weren't really interested. And that's just so hard to see.
So how would a parent know if their kids are on drugs? I mean, what are some of the signs that they see? I know this is a big question, but
smile.
how do they begin to, you know, what are some of the common things that a parent would begin to see?
You know, I go 0 to 60 in like 1 second, so yeah. I just want to say drug test them. But I know what you're looking for, signs and symptoms.
It's a
so
process.
Let's just slow down. We'll get there eventually, right? Signs and symptoms. Every single time we have a Not My Kid training, there'll inevitably be a parent there that wants to give their personal their parent testimony of their child using. And we encourage it because it opens the door or helps alleviate the stigma associated with it because they see this parent and then it becomes real. So they'll tell their story and without a doubt, it's the child hid it from their parents for 2 years.
Yeah.
And that
right.
2 years number just comes back and comes back and comes back. And I go,
really?
I can't even imagine. Same house, you know, same set of rules, same standard. And the child's, you know, coming to breakfast or whatever meal they do together. And you just don't know what's happening right there. But it is so, that's absolutely the standard. And that's what we tell parents, that they can hide it for upwards of 2 years. And that they're... And we don't say experimenting, you're either using or you're not, but it starts at 13 nationally. And we give them these statistics and we say, you know, if it's going to be an age-appropriate talk, which it should be, why not introduce a drug test kit at a very young age so that it just becomes the norm?
Well, it was really interesting. Do you remember when we interviewed a bunch of people we knew?
Yes.
And they were saying things like, if you're... kids are hanging around with the people that you think they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You're right. If you think they're using drugs, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, they went through this whole list and they went through all their favorite hiding spots and stuff like that. It was great.
Yeah. And that was directly from the horse's mouth. The idea that if your parental instincts, if that little spider
trust
sense
them.
Is tingling,
yeah.
trust them and err on the side of caution.
You definitely know when something's up. And I'll think back to all the interventions I've had with my parents and, you know, they'll say things like, well, you know, she was a good kid or he was a good kid. He got good grades. He hung around with good kids.
Yeah.
And they'll tick all the boxes. And then there'll be these red flags that they'll go back and remember. It's like if I only paid attention when I first thought or first instinctually believed that to be a problem, how much better off would the child have been? You
right,
know?
Right. And just, you know, we hear the parents all the time, Abby, that come in and say, you know, it was like there was this one person, our darling little son or daughter, and then it became this other person. And where did that person go? And
so often that's the case. And then you have to basically counsel the parent that you're no longer dealing with your son or daughter. It's now the drug.
Yeah.
You know?
Listen, this is a great conversation. We'll be back after a break. We're talking about drugs in our schools, in our communities, and how most parents think everyone else's kids do drugs but theirs. And we're talking about the telltale signs of teen drug use and what to do if you find out your kid is using.
So, Nancy, the first question is for you.
Sure.
So, I have a kid, and they're a great student, and then what kinds of things would I be worried
then
about?
Not if so
I
much.
Then not so much.
Well, it's usually more than one sign, because mm-hmm. some of it, as you think about it, is somewhat typical teen behavior with the change in hormones and everything else that goes on. But we talk about dropping grades or isolation from the family, mood swings, they're dishonest about where they were or who they were with. They start smoking cigarettes or smelling like cigarettes. There's a change in peer groups or defiance to authority or change in what they believe to be your parental values.
I mean, one of the things you said right before we left was that, I mean, at one point, so a lot of this is caused by the drug taking over the kid's decision making. And so when parents get so mad, they're getting mad at an addiction rather than at, it's not their kid there who's running things at the moment.
In that sense, it's not their kid.
Yeah.
Not in the, it's not my kid that does drugs or whatever, but yes. A lot of times parents will come to me because their kids have started stealing to support their drug habit. And what do I do? I don't know how to help. I want to help. And we try to explain to them they're taking advantage of their family in hopes that they won't pursue charges. So they'll just be able to just keep taking and taking. And again, it's not them per se. It's their drug addiction. And they're doing whatever they can to support it, especially if it's opioids. It becomes a maintenance drug. They're just doing it so they don't get sick. So we talk about get them help early. And, you know, there are some communities that are fortunate enough to have a drug court. So yeah, you have that as well.
And you suggest, I mean, and you help them, like, figure out how to confront them. What do you recommend?
Have a plan.
Have a plan. Because this is what happens. I have people call, I just confronted my daughter, and she finally admitted she has a drug problem.
Now what?
Yeah, now what? And it's like, you have this very short window of opportunity.
Right.
Before you do anything, get a plan together.
Right. The first time,
talk to the family. Get everybody on board.
The first time I drug tested my own son, he was 13. I'd actually gone through the Not My Kid training, and I saw all these like signs and symptoms, and I was like, oh my God, my son's using drugs. I've been a police officer for 13 years. I don't understand this. So anyway, I get the kit. We give away $40 drug test kits, and they test for 12 different substances. So, you know, under the guise of the program, you put the kit on the kitchen table, and they go, what's that? And you go, it's a drug test kit. And then they go, what's it for? And you say, to drug test you. And they go, why? You don't trust me? I can't believe you don't believe in me. You know, oh, well, I need to save the kit because obviously this is going to be positive. If that's a reaction. I brought it home and I put it on the table. He goes, what's it for? I said, to drug test you. And he goes, uh-oh. And I almost fell out of my chair. Of course, it was him and his sarcasm that I so beautifully taught him.
Where does that come from?
Yeah, I can't even imagine. It must be his father's side. So I about almost lost my mind because he was 13. And I just, but even that, like, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to use it. What is my plan? Who am I going to call? What am I going to do from here? God forbid it be positive. So I knew who I was going to call. I knew I was going to take him to the pediatrician. And I was very aware of the resources within my own community at the time. So you need to have a plan. You can't just go into a blind, I'm going to ask my, you know, child if they're doing drugs. Because the answer is, if you're using drugs, it's going to be no. And if you're not using, it's still going to be no. So when you ask a child, they're going to deny it.
Well, one of the things NIDA has has some really National Institute of Drug Addiction has some really good how to walk through one of these, how to plan it, how to talk to other family members, you know, what to do if it's positive, what to do if they admit it.
Sure.
You know, where to go, how to, you know, because...
But at the end of the day, there's a reason why the child's using whatever it is. So you probably want to...
Underlying reason?
Yeah, you probably want to know what that is, or at least try to find out.
Right.
I think it's what a lot of parents take for granted. Oh, you're just doing this to upset me. Well, no, not necessarily.
Or the whole myth of just, it's just the peer pressure. It's those kids you're hanging with. But it's not just that. That kids are trying to fill some void that's not, you know, being
or
met
self-medicated
in their life.
Or self-medicated.
A lot of the signs and symptoms you mentioned also sound like early adolescence to me.
Yes.
You know,
and depression.
Like, yeah, and depression. Yeah.
Right, but suppose they're not using drugs and they still have all these symptoms. They still need
help.
They
still need help.
Sure.
If you have a kid that's hiding in their room and, you know, getting angry easily and their school performance is dropping, it just seems to me that they need help some kind.
So how do you help parents pass this denial? Like, you know, what's the best?
If
you're going into the community and saying, you know,
hi, your kid might have a drug problem. That
no,
goes
see,
over
that,
real
I
well.
Don't say okay. that. I don't say that. And I can't. It's not that I can't. It's that I don't want to, because not every kid is using drugs.
That's right.
Right.
Number one. There's that 25% you talked about.
That's never tried anything, yes.
No, but seriously, when we have a Not My Kid training, and I'm very adamant about this, it is drug awareness training for parents. Come and find out what the current statistics are, the signs, the symptoms, what it looks like, what it is, because not necessarily your kid that's struggling, but maybe somebody you know, a niece, nephew, cousin, whatever. But we say, come get the education so you know what to look for. And I think a lot of parents think by coming to the training, they're admitting that their kid has a problem, and that's not the case at all whatsoever. This is preventative. If it's caught early enough, it can be intervention, but my biggest struggle is just getting parents to attend the training, because I think there's even a stigma around, you know, why are you going to the police? Why are you going to the training the police department's hosting about drug use?
What if one of my neighbors sees me?
Right.
Have you seen an uptick in attendance since this kind of the more... media attention that's been drawn to the opiate epidemic in Massachusetts?
See, you say more attention by media, but I feel like it's just been the same since 2008.
So that's frustrating to you.
It is frustrating.
Yeah.
I don't think people talk about it enough.
What are you seeing on the ground in Brockton?
That's a great question.
Not literally.
It's in every community.
Yes.
These substances are in most people's, unfortunately, medicine cabinet, and they're so attainable by kids that I prescribe them. And I always say to my parents at training, I go, you know, back in the day, a medicine cabinet was for medicine. Well, we're beyond that now. You have to lock up these medicines. It's your moral obligation to make sure they're inaccessible, because if a child can hide from their own parents for 2 years, imagine how long a friend's friend or a friend's cousin, a friend's sibling, whatever the case may be, could hide it from a parent.
Yeah.
And when, you know, your kids' friends come over and they're in the bathroom, you're not with them, obviously. So if they open the medicine cabinet, you're going to notice if 30 pills are missing. You won't notice if one or two are gone.
Right, and you also won't notice for a while.
Right.
And maybe, yeah.
And the
unless you open
done.
Mine, and then I put marbles in it, so when you open it, they fall in the sink. So if you ever come over, just be aware that that's going to happen.
Open your mouth.
Excellent. I like this.
But so many parents are just don't understand that, and they say, well, that's something the doctor prescribed me, so... why would my son take it? I think there's a generational break there in the understanding of just what's going on in our communities. And we were talking before the show, it's not Brockton. It's not just, you know, it's everywhere. It's the upscale suburbs.
But just like you said, those kids are using it. And I think one of the things across the board since the beginning of this was they're safer to use because a doctor prescribes
them. Right. There's that image of that. And an opiate, a prescribed opiate can kill you just as quickly as heroin
can
kill you.
That's right. And you'll very quickly switch to heroin because you won't be able to afford the opiates.
That's absolutely right. You're listening to Right Turn Radio. We'll be back after the break. Our guest tonight, Gabby, in case you forgot over the break, our Officer Nancy Liedberg of the Brockton Police Department, and Heather Kennedy, Program Director of the COPE Center.
Well, it's been very quiet.
Yes.
Well, we've done the kind of, you know,
prevention.
Okay, here's what you should look for. Here's what you should do. Okay, suppose I find out my kid is smoking pot, and they say it's only once. And what do you recommend then? And then we're going to get to opiates. So Heather,
I was going to say, how does that transition? We'll figure it out.
I don't think Heather has a voice.
She does.
Okay.
What would you do as a parent?
If my kid...
Let's not say your kid, but...
If a kid, somebody else's kid.
What would
kid.
You suggest to me?
If a kid said that they had smoked marijuana once, what would I do? I would probably ask them how it felt, why they did it, and if they thought they were going to do it again.
That sounds
terrible.
And maybe under what, the, under what circumstances
it happened.
I
like it.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't kick them out?
I don't think I would kick them out.
Okay.
Not for that, because I think it would only go downhill from there.
Yeah.
Okay, then they come back from the party, and they said, you know, two nights ago I had a perk at this party, and I had a couple drinks. What
See how it's
then?
A game changer?
Yeah.
So what would you do?
I would probably sit down, and I would probably have the same conversation around why, who were you with, how did it happen, how did it feel, did you like it, do you think you're going to do it again, and get into a real conversation about... the dangers of opiate addiction.
And what are they? How would you tell? Okay, tell me.
Opiates are a drug of tolerance. So
what's that mean?
It means that, generally speaking, your body changes based on the very first opiate you use. And if you enjoyed that euphoria that you got the first time you use, you'll probably be chasing that particular euphoria the next time. And then the next time and the next time. And basically, the more you use, the more you need to use in order to feel that high again. And then you develop a tolerance where your body physically needs that much in the system in order just to feel normal.
Just to maintain.
Now, the parents come to us, say, yeah, we don't have that in our family. I mean, I like my drinks, or, you know, my grandfather, you know, drank and would be considered an alcoholic, but we're not heroin addicts. What do you tell those people?
Percocet, Oxycontin, Vicodin, heroin, it's all about the same as far as your brain is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your kid. Do you want to take that chance?
Right.
But addiction is addiction.
Yeah. Well, I guess what we see in parents that come to us a lot is this kind of just blanket denial of, like, you know.
Not anymore by the time they come to us.
Yeah,
but
by
they talk to us about.
And is the denial the stigma of it?
Yeah.
No, I also think that it's your baby, and you look and your baby's told you the truth.
It was your job to protect them.
You know, and here, one of the parents described me that, you know, it's like they knew something was up and they couldn't figure it out, and when he finally confessed, it was like, oh, you know, like getting kicked in the stomach. It was like,
right.
Oh my gosh,
but it is
everything makes
a little
sense.
From the stigma, because I get that a lot, where the parents say, you know, thank God he's only stealing stuff to get perks or whatever it is, and you know, that, like, heroin's way over the top compared to that for them,
right?
And they see that as, like, they see that as a game changer.
Well, one of the sad things is also they don't feel like they can then talk to the other parents about it, and every parent who's ever brought it up that I've met with people they know have found other parents who are going through the same thing or have gone through the same thing.
Sure.
So there's incredible stigma.
There's the Learn to Cope support group, you know, for that exact reason, for the families.
Tell us more about Learn to Cope.
Heather?
Okay, it's a family support group. It's a family support group for families who are suffering with addiction in their family, usually around opiate addiction.
And there are a lot of places that have support groups for families. So if you find out your kid's in trouble, there's Learn to Cope. You can Google it. There's Al-Anon. There's Al-Anon. There's you know, lots of agencies around have programs for parents. And everybody I know who's used them pretty much has found them useful, even if it's, you know, some people use it for a long time and some people go two or three times. But it makes them feel like, oh, it's not anything terrible that I've done. I think that's one of the major things. It's you feel like you've failed.
Right, as a parent. So, Heather, you are involved in training people, and I'm assuming you give parents these kits. You're involved in training for Narcan. Can you explain what Narcan is?
Sure. Narcan is an opiate antagonist. It does the opposite of what an opiate does. So an opiate will sit on certain receptors in your brain, and eventually you slowly stop breathing if you overwhelm those receptors, and that's what an overdose is.
So this is what our governor has been talking about giving to all the state police. It's what, you know, our mayor wanted all first responders to have. So you have some Narcan here.
Keep going. I'm sorry.
So tell us. So you recommend that parents have this on hand if they're worried about their kids?
I do. It's one of those things where if somebody's overdosing on an opiate, there are any number of factors that could lead to an overdose. So even if it's somebody who's just prescribed an opiate and maybe they have, you know, blood pressure medication, or maybe they decide to have a drink or two, or maybe they have anxiety medication, or any number of combination of things, and the receptors in the brain that send the signal to breathe may not be able to do so if those receptors are overwhelmed.
Now people say, well, aren't you just encouraging people to take drugs by allowing them, you know, giving them an easy out?
Having worked with opiate addicts for a very long time, I do not know one that would choose to be Narcan'd. It puts somebody into withdrawal. So they're going to feel like those receptors aren't sitting in the brain, so now your body isn't feeling normal, and they really do have a physical reaction. The nasal form that we give is usually a little bit more mild, but they're not going to be able to get high or feel not sick for anywhere from 20 minutes to about 90 minutes at the very least.
And so this is a spray that's like a mist that goes into the nose?
Yes, Massachusetts actually has an atomizer, which turns the medication into a mist that can be absorbed through the mucous membranes in the nose. So if somebody's not breathing, it's not inhaled, but enough of the medication gets absorbed through the mucous membranes in the nose, absorbed into the bloodstream, and then goes directly to the brain.
So I want to get back to the Narcan, but I also want to invite our caller, Paul, in. Paul, how are you doing? Welcome to Right Turn Radio.
Yes, I'm glad to see you folks resurface. This seems like a losing battle. I'm 52 years of age, right? And I can remember when they made fun of Nancy Reagan, Just Say No. And I'm seeing how things have really escalated out of control. When I was in high school, and I went to high school downtown on Tremont Street, Don Bosco, it was mostly, I think, marijuana. And, you know, alcohol was used, you know, prior to going to dances when you wanted to meet girls. And then there was some pill use, maybe mescal, but now I see the pharmaceutical companies, even the government to a certain extent, they're just over their head. And if you look at the vast majority of men that are incarcerated, I imagine women to a certain extent too, they all seem to have substance abuse problems, you know, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, et cetera, you know, and heroin is dirt cheap. And it seems like we just don't know what to do about it, and it seems like white America, who was blind to it for years when it was a scourge in a lot of the inner city poorer people, you know, blacks, Hispanics, Puerto Ricans in New York, et cetera, jazz musicians, whoever else. Now all of a sudden we get some kids out in the suburbs overdosing, going on crime sprees, breaking into your house and robbing your grandmother. Now all of a sudden we're trying to address it. I think the genie's so far out of the bottle, I don't know if we have to resort to like what Mao Zedong did or what some of these guys.
Well, thank you for your
sure.
comment, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
And I think you bring up a really good point, is that culturally it feels sometimes to people like us that are in the trenches, and I'm interested, Nancy, what your thought is that, you know, this has become a very big issue. We're losing kids in a way that we've never lost them before. Getting outside the, you know, just talking to your kids and all that, what can we do prevention-wise to, what can we as a culture begin to deal with to help this thing?
Well, I think there's more than one question there, but definitely, you know, for the most part, we're talking about illicit drug use. And should we go backwards a little bit and talk about the fact that it's still an overprescribed medication that's being widely misused?
So maybe some kind of reform in the way that opiates are prescribed, sure. Opiates and other drugs.
You know, the drug registry and things like that, sure, absolutely. Right. But then, you know, we're still trying to combat things like Zohydro and everything else that's out there.
That's a whole nother show.
It's a whole nother show.
No, but I think it's really important to look at what Paul was saying, that there's a big societal issue of dealing with drugs in a way that is kind of not comprehensive. And I don't think it's hopeless.
He's basically saying, is somebody asleep at the wheel?
Somebody's
asleep
at the
wheel. It really feels like that.
And as a society, we have to come back together and solve this problem, because it's not going to go away on its own. I'm going to get off my high horse. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Narcan and other harm reduction efforts to stem the tide. Thanks for listening to Right Turn Radio. We'll be right back.
So we were just talking about Narcan. And Narcan, we're here with wonderful guests. We're here with Nancy Liedberg and Heather Kennedy, and we're going to ask Heather, do you recommend that parents have Narcan if their kid's active?
I definitely recommend it. One of the higher risk times for overdose is after any kind of abstinence or if any kind of change in tolerance. So anywhere from 1 to 3 days of somebody not using is a great start towards recovery, but it also seriously changes somebody's tolerance level.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that opiate addiction is a process. It's a chronic addiction. So people tend to take, in Massachusetts, I think it's 6 to 8 tries to get 1 year sobriety from an opiate addiction. So there are going to be lots of tries. And to have Narcan on hand when somebody's overdosing, they're lacking oxygen and their respiratory system is shutting down. So this shortens the rescue breathing time when minutes really matter.
And just to be clear, when we say opiates, we also mean not only heroin, but prescription pain medication as well, just so people understand that.
Yeah, methadone, fentanyl, Divacet, Dilaudid.
Right, and if you're coming across someone who is shallow breathing and is unconscious, you don't have to assess whether or not they, I mean, if they've been doing drugs.
It's chin to chest, I think, is the telltale.
And you call 911 and you do this.
Yes, fewer than 8 breaths a minute. They're non-responsive. You might be putting your knuckles to their breastbone and doing a sternal rub and really just trying to see if they're going to respond. And opiates have a half-life. So heroin lasts in somebody's body anywhere about 6 hours. So for the first 3 hours, they could be getting more high and they could be building up to an overdose.
That's
or
right.
They could be coming back down. So you don't necessarily want somebody to respond and then walk away if they might be getting worse.
Okay, so call 911 and do it. So, I mean, we're kind of shifting topics here, but it is another issue of adolescence. And Paul, our caller, brought it up. People get drunk before going to dances. It is prom time. It is graduation time. It is expected at graduation and proms that people drink. It's expected. It's not recommended. Most schools have zero tolerance policies about it, from what we hear. But what is your experience around proms and graduations? What is your recommendation to parents?
I think I find it interesting that the same group of parents that have no issue with their kids taking the breathalyzer to get into the prom are the same group of parents that say, I can't drug test my kid. And I struggle with that as a parent, as a police officer.
So you think you have to be consistent. You feel like everybody should be tested as much as parents feel like it's needed.
No, I just feel like with the struggle we are currently growing through, drug testing is just another tool in the toolbox. Your instincts are first, obviously, number one. We talked about that. But, you know, if a kid comes home with straight A's and says, Mom, Dad, I got straight A's, you're going to say what? Let me see the report card.
That's great. Let me see the report card. You're not doing drugs? That's great. Let's pee in this cup.
That's right. And then we'll flip it and see what happens. Cross our fingers. Hope to have a plan.
So the gig is up, basically, Officer Liedberg.
I don't know.
Is there a way for parents to get help? Are there online resources? Heather, you spoke about Learn to Cope and parents getting Narcan training through them.
I generally send just about every parent I come across who gives us a call to a Learn to Cope meeting. They also have an online support chat that's really great, too.
Well, also, there's a lot, I mean, many towns, I mean, Nancy was talking about it, and she'll give us specifics, but many towns even our little town, Jill, has had a lot of, you know, trying to educate parents about what's going on in, you know, middle school years and high school and what to expect. And, you know, it's amazing seeing these parents coming stunned out of these things that say, you know, the average age of experimenting with, you know, drugs is like 14. Did you know that? I'm like, yes.
For a long time.
but I mean, there are these, you know, I think just there, people are trying to deal with it a little. But
I think the resources are what they've always been.
Obviously, they're always there.
Your family can be a good resource, but knowing who to call, you know, I always rely on my social worker friends when I am going through something like this where, you know, you don't know what to do. And your first response is, I'm the parent. So you have to kind of talk yourself off the ledge before you even do it.
Right.
But knowing who to call, what the resources are, I always say, when in doubt, talk to the school, especially if you have a good relationship. There's guidance counselors, school adjustment counselors. There's people there that want to help, and they can be a great resource. Obviously, if you have school resource officers in your system, your local police department can be helpful in a situation like this.
Right, and I also think there are a lot of parent supports out there.
Yeah, there are.
And use them. I think that's the saddest part, is that there are resources like you're not my kid. I mean, that was one of my favorite stories. She set up this thing saying, everybody will want to know about addiction, and they'll come to my, you know, training, and they'll want to know what's in the schools. And she, your first one, you had like 13 parents.
Yeah.
Which is 13 parents.
But that I didn't have before. Yeah, right. It's the flip side of that coin.
That's great. But I mean, people generally only get help for this kind of thing when
they need it and they're in crisis.
And, yeah. And they call people like me, and they call you. And, you know, we get a lot of phone calls because, oh, we know you're in the addiction field, my friend.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the point is that there is hope out there. There are resources. There's great parental support if folks need it, and the whole thing is, talk to your kids. This is an issue that won't go away unless there's a conversation, and there has to be like open conversation about this. Otherwise, it's going to keep on going. We'll put up a link to Learn to Cope and other parental resources on our Facebook page later on. I'd like to thank Officer Nancy Liedberg of the Brockton Police Department for being here.
And Heather Kennedy, Program Director of COPE Center. And we're going to publish a link so people can get in touch with her if they have questions about Narcan.
Thanks so much, you guys,
for coming
in tonight.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.